Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 15th of November. We honor our nation's veterans this hour of the program. We're marking Veterans Day, as I have said, a little bit late because so many parades were going on, and we wanted to make sure that we reached as many veterans as we could during this hour, so we figured it was okay to have this day twice. It's just unofficial, but to us, important honoring of our nation's veterans. We have two guests with us this hour, and I'm sure that we will be entertaining many phone calls. Retired Colonel Joseph Huseth is with us. He has an amazing life. He was drafted into World War II. He retired from the Army in 1983 after having served in World War II, the Korean War, and also in Vietnam. He was a participant on the first Badger Honor Flight, which you'll recall these flights are still taking place. They're taking World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to see the memorial and to have people pay tribute to them. And it's quite an emotional and important experience for those who served in World War II. There aren't very many around anymore because they have passed away. It was a very moving experience for him, and he will be talking about that with us as well as other areas during the course of this hour. Retired Colonel Joseph Huseth, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time today. Also joining us this hour is William Husted, who served in Vietnam as a member of the 101st Airborne Division. He was wounded in action in October of 1969. He is past president of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum Foundation Board, past state president of the Wisconsin Vietnam Veterans, and currently serves as state commander of the Wisconsin Military Order of the Purple Heart. And William, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And let's make sure that we have Colonel Huseth with us. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, great. Thank you very much. If you could please take us in a couple moments of time, and let's start with you, Colonel Huseth, of where you were and under what circumstances you went into World War II, and what happened when you came home, just your arrival into the Army and your welcome home.
Well, I'm probably one of the younger veterans of World War II. I was just 18 years old.
Oh, my.
In 1944, when I volunteered for the draft, and we got to Europe. Our job was to pick up the pieces from the Battle of the Bulge. I went over as an infantry replacement, but when I got to Europe, in France there, the 2nd Armored Division was in need of more people, and for whatever reason, my name was called off to go to become a tanker with the 2nd Armored Division, and which I was kind of thankful for because I'd rather be in a tank than in a foxhole. But that was how I got to Europe in World War II, and we went through the campaigns there and ended the war up at Magdeburg on the Elbe River. And that was where we were waiting for the Russian troops to take Berlin. We wondered at the time why we were just sitting there and not moving forward, but we later found out there was an agreement made. We moved into Berlin. The 2nd Armored Division was the first American unit into Berlin, and we served there as the honor guard for the Big Three meeting.
Oh, you did?
And that was for Churchill, for Stalin, and for President Truman.
Oh, my.
And each one of them, on a separate days, reviewed the troops. The whole division was lined up on one side of the Autobahn, or the interstate kind of highway, and they on separate days, came down and reviewed the troops riding in a white half-track. I never forget that. That was quite an experience to see all three of those world leaders at the time.
Oh, my goodness. I'll bet you wish you had a picture of that with you.
I wish wish I had had some pictures, but of course we weren't able to take pictures back in those days.
You were,
but when I got home, I got back then in 46. We got back to the United States, and of course everybody welcomed, but there was no welcoming parade. That had all taken place, of course, at the very end of World War II, and when the troops came back to New York City and so on.
But, yes. We'll talk more about your remarkable experience and in Korea and in Vietnam. Mr. William Husestad, tell me about you. How were you a very young man? I bet you were, too, when you went to Vietnam. Under what circumstances did you go, and under what did you return?
Well, I was drafted, and I had a student deferment. I went when I was going to college. So I'd actually graduated from college, was married, and had a child. And when I got out of the service, then I got drafted. So I went into the service in October 68. In April of 1969, I went to Vietnam after basic training and advanced infantry training. When I got to Vietnam, I went over as a replacement and got assigned to the 101st Airborne, even though I wasn't airborne. But, of course, everybody was infantry over there anyway. There really was not airborne operations going on. We were considered air mobile, which meant we were taken from here to there in helicopters. Then in October of 69, I was wounded. And quite severely, I spent 4 months in the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
And then when I came home, I guess I had heard rumors of what our reception would be, but I wasn't prepared for it anyway. And you know, some of us were in our uniforms when we got off the plane because, of course, we had just come from Japan. I had come from Japan off a hospital airplane, and our reception, the people in the airports were not very welcoming to us, spitting and throwing things and saying things to us. So we went to the restroom, changed into our civilian clothes, and then basically tried to blend into society. I had some active duty to do down in Fort Hood, Texas, to finish out my two years. But basically, until the Vietnam Wall went up in 1982, I really kind of hid my identity as a Vietnam veteran. And most people in the community didn't know that I'd even been there. They kind of forgot about it. And that's the way I kind of liked it, I guess. But after 82, I kind of came out of my shell and joined some veterans organizations and became involved in. And now a lot of times when I'm offered to give a speech, I usually start out with, I'm proud to be a Vietnam veteran. And it's, the reason I say it is it took me so long to be able to say that I like to say it now that I feel I can.
Right. And you felt as though you couldn't say anything because of the extreme controversy and how people maybe labeled you as a Vietnam vet in a war that was, it was not very popular, that was very difficult for this country. They saw you as a face of an unpopular war, perhaps?
Yeah. You know, if you were at a social gathering or something like that, that was, you know, that certainly is something that you wouldn't bring up or anything like that. Because,
right.
Because that would probably bring out the whole subject of the war and why not and why or, you know, and all of those kinds of things. And, you know, I didn't really feel like debating that or talking about it. So it's just much easier to not say anything.
Yeah, I'm sorry you had to go through that. You served Colonel Huseth in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. Tell me about your Vietnam experience.
Well, I was a little earlier in Vietnam. I got orders to go to Vietnam in 1966, and 66, 67 was my time there.
Very early.
And then, of course, being on regular active duty, coming home, I went right to a military post. And, you know, I had my family, I joined my family at, in Fort Ord, California, and then we went directly to Fort Linwood, Missouri. And, of course, the situation was entirely different there. You were welcome back, and everybody knew and understood what the situation was. I think a lot of people don't really understand the problems of Vietnam, and but that was my time there, and I was fortunate in serving at the in the Central Highlands of Vietnam rather than down in the jungles, which was quite a difference too.
Right. Isn't it a very hard life? It's hard for those of us, it's hard for me actually, to imagine being in war because I haven't been in war, and I think that many of us who have never been in war can't fully understand. But even more incomprehensible would be having to go through all of those wars, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. That's a hard life, sir, isn't it?
There are a lot of plus sides, too, you know, so that... during as I mentioned before, in World War II, I was a tanker, and in Korea was really the worst time for me because I was infantry in Korea. I was a platoon sergeant at the time. And then following Korea, I took a break and went to seminary, became a clergyman, and so I was a chaplain in Vietnam. So that was quite a bit different, too, but... they're all, you know, war is not fun, that's for sure.
No, I'm sure it isn't. And you were both so young. Can you tell me about your age, William, when you were drafted into Vietnam? You were just really a kid, weren't you?
Well, yes, but I was out of college, so I basically was about 22 years old. So I was older than a lot of the guys that I was with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, still you, I don't think anything really prepares you for what you're going to see in wartime, no matter what your age is. And it's hard to see friends die and other people, even if you're not very close to them. And it does, you know, change the way you look at of your life from then on. I mean, I look upon every day as really a gift when you compare yourself to people that died at such a young age. And to some respects, that kind of guided me into a life of wanting to serve veterans because I felt so fortunate to you know, to survive the war and come back basically in one piece, even though I was wounded. And so I feel very fortunate, and I feel very blessed, and I feel like I owe something to the general veterans population, some of them which were not as fortunate as I. I spent a lot of time in the hospital, and a lot of those people that I was shot in the arm and the leg both, so you know, I had a lot of recuperation, was on crutches and all of that kind of thing. And a lot of the guys that were in the hospital with me were much more severely wounded. And so that made me feel fortunate as well.
Yeah. What can both of you tell us, for those of us who have not experienced the military, our maybe family members have, but we haven't. It brings forward all these big questions about why we fight and what we will die for and what's important to all of us and having served with a band of brothers and sisters. What can both of you tell us, we civilians, that we need to know about what you went through? Because you probably have learned some pretty big things that many of us haven't had a chance to learn. Am I being clear with this question? There's something about having been through that kind of combat and facing possible death that I'm sure is big in your lives that we need to know about.
I think the bottom line is that freedom is not free. And we have to recognize that in this world of ours, there are people who do not understand this whole business of freedom. And as long as they can have control of others, that's their goal. And we simply have to realize that this world of ours is not made up of all good people. Fortunately, the vast majority of people are, but on the other hand, there are those who understand nothing but strength, and that's where we as a nation who have been, who are the really the only free nation in the world. When you, this is where freedom was developed and where freedom was fought for and where freedom came into being was here in this great country of ours. And it seems to me then we have an obligation to try to help people in the rest of the world to experience that same thing. And that's not an easy task or a pretty task because of the...
I think there is a camaraderie among of people who have been in a war and are veterans. And it is hard for the general population to understand that. My wife has a hard time understanding why I need to be so involved in veterans things. And so even though she's been kind of a veteran's wife for a long time, it's so hard for her sometimes to grasp why I feel this need to do that. But I do think it's a job of ours, those of us that have been in the military, to try to explain to some degree at least to the civilian population and to the young people in schools what war is all about and how serious it is and why we should do all we can to not have to fight a war if we don't have to. But if we do fight a war, we fight a war to win, and the people should be behind the troops when that is taking place.
We are going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. We are honoring our veterans this hour of the program. Our guest, who you just heard, spoke William Husted, who is past president of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum Foundation Board. He is also a past president of Wisconsin Vietnam Veterans. He was serving in Vietnam as a member of the 101st Airborne Division, was wounded in action in October of 1969. He serves now as state commander of the Wisconsin Military Order of the Purple Heart. Retired Colonel Joseph Huseth was drafted in and signed up for service in the Army in World War II, and he served in World War II, the Korean War, and Vietnam. He was a chaplain in the Vietnam War, participant on the first Badger Honor Flight. Both of our guests have talked about going to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and World War II Memorial, and they were very emotional experiences for both men. We'll talk about that and more, and welcome your phone calls. A couple lines are open. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, and let's start with Josh from Madison. Hello, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an Iraq veteran, and every time I think about what the Vietnam veterans have been through, growing up, I've always, you know, admired our veterans, but especially the Vietnam veterans. They to come home and return to society after such opposition and what they went through, I honestly don't believe I could have done it. Hats off to them, and thank you for your service, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And tell me a little bit about perhaps what we learned from Vietnam about welcoming veterans home, that we learned something from that, at least in terms of how we pay tribute. Did we, do you think?
I think we did. I think Vietnam veterans wanted to make sure that no veterans that followed us would get that same homecoming that we did, so I think we made an effort to do that. We had a lot of influence as the years went on as far as in the different veterans groups and that type of thing. I think it was an effort by all veterans, really, to make a concerted effort to educate the public and et cetera as to why If they want to protest the war, that's one thing, but to honor the warrior regardless of how they feel about the specific war.
Mm-hmm.
I think the attitude, of course, during World War II was entirely different.
Yes.
The whole of civilian society was challenged to be part of the war effort. And everybody had their victory gardens. You had Rosie the Riveters, you know, everything. And people were united, and I think that was because of the there was an effort to help people to understand what was going on. I think that deteriorated during Korea, which has been called a forgotten war, and there was less of an emphasis there. And in Vietnam, there was really no effort to really enlist the people to be part of the war effort. And it was just sending all those guys and women over to Vietnam and reading the body count every day.
Yes.
And there was such a negative attitude all the way through society. And I think that was one of the biggest problems. And I'm hoping that, the organization that is... that is taking World War II veterans to Washington, D.C., and so on. Of course, they're emphasizing or concentrating on World War II veterans because most of us are getting pretty old and won't be around very much longer. But they're hoping to move that also to the Korean veterans and the Vietnam veterans. When the World War II veterans list has been completed.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that will continue. And I just take my hats off to the people who are preparing and working and planning for these trips to Washington, D.C. What a tremendous effort they're giving.
Yes, please tell me about your trip. You were on the inaugural flight, I believe, for this trip to Washington, D.C., And you said that it was so, so moving for you to be there. Can you tell me about that journey?
Well, it was. I was fortunate there, too, because, they're trying to take the older ones first, and I'm one of the younger ones. But for whatever reason, there were five men who had planned or who were planning to go on that trip, and who died before the day came.
Oh.
And fortunately for me, I was called to ask at the last minute, could I fill in? So that was my plus for me. But that emphasizes the fact how important this is because, I'm 85 and I'm one of the younger ones, so there aren't many years left for any of us. What a tremendous experience it was, and I just take my hat off again to the people who planned this, and to be with a group of like veterans, and to visit the National Capitol and the World War II Memorial was just a tremendously moving experience for me.
Oh, I'm sure that it was. I am sure that it was. And William, you've been to the Vietnam Memorial?
Yes, several times.
And that must be a very moving experience as well. I haven't seen it yet. We're going to Washington. We're taking listeners, so I will see it in a couple months. And I don't know if you can look forward to such a thing, but I really want to see that as well.
Well, it's a very moving memorial. As the World War II and the Korean memorials are both very nicely done as well. And, I think it's especially... moving for those people that are participated in that particular conflict or grew up during that time, that type of thing. But I think the general population as well honors those memorials, and it's hard when I go to it, but I always look forward to it, and I'd like to say that there is a camaraderie among all veterans, and the Iraqi veteran said he likes to honor the Vietnam veterans, and I want to return that to him and his peers during those wars, because those wars are very tough, and there's people with multiple tours, so they have a tough road too.
Yes. Do you seek out certain names? You mentioned earlier those you served with who died. Do you seek out certain names and say a prayer for them? Yeah.
I think one of the things that struck me too at going to Washington, we landed in Washington, and here was, to begin with, there was a fire truck there that made an arch of water over the plane and to welcome us. And then we got off the plane, and here were this good night hundreds of people waiting to recognize us, honor us, and you know, didn't know any of them, of course, and yet they were there to shake our hands and it was just a tremendously moving experience. Just to think that those people took the time to come down. And I understand there's a group that does that for every flight that comes in, which to me is just amazing. And then to get back to Madison that evening, and there were over 1,200 people there in the airport here in Madison, standing, waiting to welcome us back in with the police platoon and the firemen and the band we just couldn't believe what was happening. It was just such a tremendous experience for all of us, and the three memorials, both the World War II, the Korean, and the Vietnam, they all are distinctive and interesting and different. The World War II memorial, of course, is huge. And it covers a lot of things. One thing that struck me there, particularly, was the 4,000 gold stars. And each one of those represented 100 men or women who had died during World War II as service people. And to just to see that, over 400,000 deaths during World War II.
Oh, my.
Service people, hard to understand. And then, of course, the Korean memorial was very significant to me because I was a rifle platoon sergeant, and that was my platoon that was marching there. And it just brought back the memories of that's exactly the way we moved through the rice paddies and up through the mountains and so on. And then, of course, the Vietnam memorial is just very impressive with the names, and you look for the names of people you served with and so on. But
it was
really a moving experience.
Oh, I'll bet. It's moving for me, and I'm so far removed from it to hear you talk about it. Let's go to Don from Abbotsford next. Hi, Don.
Hello. Thanks for the program.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I've got a question for both of your guests. I'm a 15-year Marine vet. I'm just curious, do the memories ever fade, and does it ever get any easier to sleep?
Well, I think that a lot of that depends on the individual, right? I personally, even as a tanker in World War II and as an infantry person in Korea and seeing a lot of your friends not come home, you know, what a sad thing it was. And yet at the same time, it's the realization that there's something for them in the future, too. So that I really never had any big problems with sleeping, although my wife tells me that I would cry out sometimes at night and so on. But I don't recall any real big problems, and but we're all individuals, you know, and our personalities are different. We react differently to the same situation, and each person has to deal with that individually, it seems to me. And so.
Did you have problems? Do you have problems sleeping, William Husted?
Yeah, yes, I do, and it has continued on through the years. I am going to a therapist at the VA, and that does help. I mean, because in some ways, I want to forget some of that. In other ways, if I do forget that, I feel like I'm not honoring the people that I'm.
And you never can forget that.
Hmm. So it, you know, my therapist basically telling me you got to got to learn to accept some of that and kind of look at it a little bit differently rather than trying to look at it as I got to forget it or that type of thing, because I don't think you're going to ever forget it.
Right.
Just got to learn to accept that that some of that's going to happen and try to deal with it, but not forget.
Have you seen a therapist? Are you getting some help done?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm yeah. Please don't take that the wrong way. I'm completely functional. I work as an engineer. But my question was, I only sleep about two to 3 hours a night.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's outstanding for the amount of things that you can get done.
That
was my number one question. I work heavily with the Veterans Department down in Illinois. Just trying to counsel a lot of the guys that are coming back. You know, there's a common ground there for somebody that's actually been in the trenches, so to speak. There's a camaraderie that your guests were talking about, or a common ground that lets somebody. It's a lot easier to talk to somebody that's been there than it is to talk to somebody that's just read about it in the book.
I understand that, but you're only sleeping 2 to 3 hours a night because you have nightmares, or?
Yeah, I've got a hip block and a post-hypnotic suggestion in place. It's sweats. It's the whole gamut of Gulf War or whatever, Gulf War syndrome or however they group it.
Yes.
It's PTSD is what it boils down to.
Right. Well, I hope somebody can help you find more sleep because we need to sleep.
Oh, you'd be amazed how clean my garage is. It's outstanding. But again, gentlemen, I won't take any more of your time, but thank you very much for the service and carry on what you're doing.
Thank you.
For your service too.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. And I hope you are able to find some sleep. It makes me think about services because we, as you both know, have been through controversy about how we welcome vets home and how we provide for vets. Don said that he was able to get some therapy, and you are as well, Mr. Hustad. Do we have enough of that available for our vets? Because being in a war, fighting in a war, has got to affect your psyche in fairly substantial ways. Even though you can carry on, there's something that you carry with you. Do we have enough people who can hear vets out?
I think in general, the answer is yes. If all of the veterans that needed services were in the system, we probably would not. So it's a little bit of a problem of outreach to be able to get veterans into the system that are probably not willing to enter into the system because of their unwillingness to enter into what they view as a government bureaucracy. And there's some hard feelings there, so some of them don't want to get into the system, and they really should get into the system.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it varies from different parts of the country, too. The further east you are, it seems to me that more available than when you get out into some of the hinterlands of the Midwest and so on. But I think, generally speaking, the VA has done a very good job, I think.
Well, you know, those Easterners can't even figure out what time zone we're in frequently. They need to learn, right? Let's go to Eugene from Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guests. During the summer, I run a shoeshine stand at Civil War reenactments and special events. And I've had the pleasure a number of times of doing shoes of World War II veterans. And one of the things I've noticed is a lot of them are still wearing the black shoes. And once you trim those out and make those look nice, the appreciation you get from the veterans, and then when they get down and get all done, you tell them this one's on the house.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. And it's just a pleasure.
That's great for you to do something like that. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
Back in the World War II, of course, it was the Brown Shoe Army, and then in Korea, and then of course we changed to the black shoes, and so there's been. If you ever say to a person, "Are you part of the Brown Shoe Army?" they know what you're talking about.
Hmm.
Way back in World War II days, and
Thanks, Eugene. Thanks very much for the call. Here's an email from Jim, who couldn't stay on the line. He wants to know your opinions, if you'd like to give them. You don't have to if you don't want to, on the differences between a drafted military and a volunteer military. William, would you start, please?
There was quite a mixture. There was quite a few drafted people that I was serving with, and there were people that were enlisted. And to tell you the truth, I didn't notice a difference between their performance or their willingness to serve after they were in the service. So I think to a certain degree it's good to have volunteers because they really wanted to, but I think the draftees, when they got into the service, most of them served at a very high level, and I didn't notice any great difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. There's certainly no difference in between the volunteers and those who are drafted. I think the difference lies in the fact that when people are drafted, you're getting the nation more involved, it seems to me, than only depending on those who will volunteer. On the other hand, to have everyone there as a volunteer is certainly a plus, too. But I think somehow there has to be a balance so that this nation of ours becomes involved in the thing rather than just the people who go on active duty. So,
I think you're very right. I hadn't thought of it in those terms before. There is a large difference if everybody's involved in it. We pay much closer attention, I think.
Yeah, I think so, you know. But yeah, it's a difficult situation that you can't draft everybody because the military doesn't need everybody.
And, right.
And as long as the needs are supplied by volunteers, you don't have any need for a draft. But there is that sense in which when people are drafted in the military, it does somehow get the nation more closely involved and attached, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to John from Mequon. Hi, John.
Hello there.
Hi.
I spoke to your screener, and I was willing to leave a statement, but she thought that it would be best that I come on. I've done oral histories of several groups of veterans. I've done World War II veterans. I've done Korean-era veterans and, of course, Vietnam veterans. And my contemporaries are the Vietnam veterans. My dad was World War II, just passed this summer. But the kids, the concern of my contemporaries is the young folks, men and women, who are returning from Iraq and from Afghanistan. The level of suicides among that group is just over the top, and it's not publicized. I wouldn't say that it's swept under the rug, but it's very, very tragic, and people should be talking about it more. I think of the hat that my friend Al gave me at LZ Lambeau. He's a Purple Heart guy, and on that hat that he gave me, it says, "All gave some gave all." And really, to me, that says it all.
Hmm. William, he said, you want to start?
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much, John, for your moving call. I just wanted William to start with a response.
I think one of the things we got, and I don't know what the statistics are, but I've heard some reports saying that the number or the percentage or the rate of suicide among the Afghanistan and Iraqi returnees is not any higher than that age group generally. Now, whether that's exactly true or not, I do not know, but I've heard that report, and I'd I would think that that ought to be looked at very carefully, because we don't hear about quite often we do, but most often we don't hear too much about the suicide rate among that age group of people. And I think that needs to be compared to the returnees, and to whether it's higher among returnees or not, I don't know. But
well, I have heard the statistics that the number of military personnel who have committed suicide from Iraq, that have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, that number is greater than the number that were killed in action in Iraq and Afghanistan. So to me, that is a startling statistic. And I think in my dealings with both the VA and with veterans groups and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, this is a problem they recognize and that they're trying to get their hands around and deal with. I don't know anything about the statistics of the percentage amongst veterans versus the general population for that same age group. That I can't speak to.
All right. It's obviously something that needs to be examined. We are honoring our veterans in our delayed Veterans Day program. We have two guests with us, and we're welcoming phone calls. William Husted served in Vietnam as a member of the 101st Airborne Division and was wounded in action in October of 1969. He's past president of the Wisconsin Veterans Museum Foundation Board. He is active in the American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, Wisconsin Vietnam Veterans, Military Order, the Purple Heart, and the VFW, and is a state past president of Wisconsin Veterans. Also joining us is retired Colonel Joseph Huseth. He is 85 years old now, was in World War II, retired from the Army in 1983. He served in World War II, the Korean War, and also in Vietnam. And we're welcoming phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to David from De Pere, our next caller. Hi, David.
Hi. I'm retired from the United States Army. I never served in combat, but I was at the 50th commemoration ceremony. I was part of a task force there for D-Day, and it's just want to express my appreciation for those who served, who actually served in combat. It's hard to imagine what they went through, especially when you walk on that beach during low tide. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and walk out there and just look at it. It's nothing but sand. There was nothing to protect those soldiers that came in on that operation there.
Yeah. How did you happen to be at the 50th commemoration, David?
They put together a task force. The 5th Corps headquarters put together a task force to go in and monitor the returning soldiers, the veterans that were going to reenact some of the ceremonies, some of the airborne drops, and put a team in there to take care of those in case something happened. You know?
Oh, yes.
And so we run security for the president's task force and had backup plans and everything in case somebody got hurt, you know, the medevac people and get to hospitals and so on. And I just had the greatest appreciation. It changes your life having spent almost 2.5 weeks in Normandy, France, at that cemetery. Mm-hmm. That will change your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Colonel Husseth?
Yes. I'm a little reluctant to even mention, you know, in light of William there and his being wounded and spending 4 months in the hospital. I was wounded twice in Korea, but fortunately they were just flesh wounds. I spent 2 weeks in the hospital at each time and then went back to the unit. But when I think of the people who were much more seriously wounded and losing legs and arms, and even more. It's just hard to even. We really need to give them thanks and praise.
Mm-hmm.
They were willing to do and what they went through to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've paid a lot of attention to World War II lately as well, but I've thought frequently about what the world would have been like if we had lost that war. We were fighting great evil during those years, weren't we? It was great evil.
Yeah, that's the world would have been entirely different if we and this country had not become involved, and so we're proud of our nation.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was on your mind, David, as well, when you were at D-Day. What if that war had not been won?
Yes, it was. I've come probably every inch of that cemetery there, and there was a headstone in there with my last name on there, and I took the information down, did a little research and whatnot there. So none of my relatives have actually served, but it's chilling.
Mm-hmm.
There's just rows and rows of markers there. It will change your life forever if you spend any length of time there and did some personal reflection. That's the only way to see that cemetery, to experience it, is to basically be by yourself. And
mm-hmm.
at 4 o'clock in the morning when you're out there by yourself, you can do that. You know?
Yeah.
Talking about D-Day, one of my close buddies during World War II, a member of my tank crew, landed with a second wave on Omaha Beach. The stories that he would tell, that the first wave was almost completely wiped out, as the gentleman who just called could visualize. But he was one of those that went all the way through there and didn't have a single scratch.
Oh, my.
It was just unbelievable to hear the stories he could tell, and he himself was never had a scratch. So it's hard to understand how these things happen. Some people can go through the worst things and come out just no problems whatsoever, and others are badly wounded and more. So it's hard to understand these, but in my mind, the good Lord is still involved in all of these things, and he's present. And
thank you, David, very much for the call. Jim from Kewaunee County, hi.
Good morning. I have been concerned, as these other gentlemen have, about the number of suicides among the young people that are fighting our wars today. And I couldn't help but think that I was in the Pacific Theater, so I know nothing about Normandy, except that it started on June 6th of 1944 and ended less than a year later. So the troops that went all the way through experienced a year of combat conditions. These kids that are going on 15-month tours to Iraq and now Afghanistan are going back again and back again, 2, 3, 4 tours.
Right.
Perhaps that's the reason they're getting so much more stress
mm-hmm.
than we had in World War II. And I'm 85 years old.
Oh, you are.
I put in my time then. I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, I'm sure you had your measure of stress as well. But I think he makes a valid point, William. It must be hard to go back and go back and go back.
I don't know how they can stand it. Their marriages break up. They wind up alcoholics. It destroys their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply, I just don't think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the going back after the first time would be extremely hard. I don't know how I would have felt about it. I mean, I was so relieved to have my tour over with and know that I would not have to do that again. To have to think about going back again, I think, and knowing what is in store for you would be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. All right, we're almost out of time.
World War II, there were many, many men and women who were away from their family for 3, 4, and 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very extensive. So A lot of it has to do, seems to me, with the whole attitude of the nation itself and how we look at things. And, of course, in this day of instant communications, we get all the negatives and very few of the positives.
Thank you both so much for being with us. I'm glad we had a chance to speak with you and that you could speak from your hearts. It was a moving hour. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome. Glad to be there.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Retired Colonel Joseph Husef, World War II vet, Korean War vet, and Vietnam War vet. One of the first participants on the initial Badger honor flight. Willem Hustadt served in Vietnam as a member of the 101st Airborne Division, wounded in action in 1969. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks for your service, vets. We'll be with you tomorrow at 9.